A child companion project will be launched in southwest China's Sichuan province. During the trial period, a so-called child companion mom will be employed and trained to, in each of the 100 villages to take better care of left-behind children. What are the requirements for a child companion mom? Will this help solve some problems concerning left-behind children? 中国扶贫基金会、中国公益研究院联合共青团四川省省委在四川启动了一个留守儿童关爱项目“同伴计划”。首批试点期间呢，将为四川省十个县的100个村分别选聘培训一名同伴妈妈，惠及当地的留守儿童。应征同伴妈妈需要些什么的条件呢？他们真的能够帮忙解决一些留守儿童的问题吗？So,
personally, I think this is a really good idea. Let's have a look at what the idea consists of.
Mm-hmm.
In one village, for example, there'll be one lady whose job it is to pay attention to all the children in the village, especially children in families that have a special situation, and they will be paid for this work. They're going to work subsidy of around 24,000 yuan a year.Just trying to quickly work that out, 24,000 yuan, £2,400, that's about $3,500 US, with 10,000 yuan for organising activities at the child companion home. So again, there's some money available for, well, activities, I suppose, buying colouring books and puzzles and that
decorating
sort of
the venue, perhaps.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So,
does the story mention the size of the village? How about what is this? Is a bigger village that requires two companion moms?
Well, I suppose that it would sort of sort out itself, I think, probably that would. I don't know the exact specifications of, mm-hmm. of the job. But I imagine that if there are too many kids, they might get someone else in to help.
Definitely, I can say something on this issue, because the prototype of this child companion mom is actually called Child Welfare Director, launched by UNICEF, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. And last year, I got the opportunity to go to some event launched by UNICEF, talking about Child Welfare Director. But there are several differences concerning two job descriptions. For one thing, the Child Welfare Director is a part-time job.They both have to take care of the children, attend to their needs, but this is a part-time job. However, the child companion mom is a full-time job, and these moms can earn about, as Marcus mentioned, 24,000 RMB a year. And for this child welfare director, it's only 800 kuai for them at
right.
that time. So, and also, generally, they will be responsible for these children.And they have to shoulder a lot of responsibilities, I have to say. For example, they have not looking for them, but they have to pay regular home visits.
Mm.
And because most of the children are left behind children, their parents might be far away from them. So they do have the needs, both mentally and physically. And also, when it comes to birth certificates, some people who are born in rural areas don't know how to apply for birth certificates.
Yes.
And then they can be in charge of all this stuff.
The other thing is, you said that some of these children might have physical or psychological needs. Well, this is another good part of this, because these visiting sort of proxy mothers, it's not their job to be a psychiatrist, you know. They will simply report what they find to qualified people.
Ah.
So that's a very good aspect of this too.
So we're not totally relying on the companion moms to do all that's necessary.
Their job is to report any problems
right,
to the relevant authorities, who can then use professionally trained people to sort out those difficulties. I think this is a really good, you know, whoever thought of this is thinking, I think, in a very, very positive way of solving a difficult problem in China.
Right, because a lot of moms, they don't have the ability to solve the problem. However, they do have the capacity to report and discover them. If we look at the requirements for recruiting these child companion moms.
Do they need to have a college degree?
No, you just have to get a high school graduation degree or above, and have to be between 19 to 55 years old, no criminal records, and they have to master Mandarin, at least one language from the local ethnic groups.
Yeah.
Because if we look at those areas, basically in Guizhou and Sichuan provinces, where a lot of my ethnic minorities living there.
I just hope this attracts attracts the sort of women who are genuinely interested in helping these children mm-hmm. and looking out for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there might be some people that would just sort of go for the money, because I think that's quite a good income in some impoverished rural areas of China,
yes.
isn't it?
I think that's above the village average, I think, 24,000
yeah.
a year.
We just have to hope the right sort of women go into these positions and
also,
get these jobs.
Yeah, and all the moms, they will be given 10,000 kuai per year for them to organize children activities, and in each village they will be building a child companion home there. So I think with all those facilities provided for children, uh-huh. and children will basically lead a happier life. However, I want to mention here, this is not all the picture, because if you look at the root causes of this issue, well, for one thing, I do laud this move, because it's necessary for us to have this child companion mother spending more time with children.
That is contingency.
Yeah.
For the moment.
Right, but if you look at the root causes, for one thing, the key issue is the uneven development between the rural and urban areas. Why do those children's parents have to leave them? Because they can't find a better job to make ends meet nearby. Well, if the villages or if the townships or if the nearby provinces can provide them with good job opportunities, they might be making up the decision not to leave them. This is my first issue here. And second, I want to mention, is also due to the binary structure of the urban and rural areas here in China. Another problem here is hukou. Because, right, I was born in this village. My mom actually wants to take me out of my village, but I can't get schooling there in Beijing. Mm-hmm. I don't have the local hukou, which means I have to pay much more when it comes to tuition fees.
Yeah, the hukou is a problem.
I think there's the latest news about some city trying to issue a residential certificate.
A sort of permit.
Migrant workers can enjoy some kind of benefits.
I think we're going to see a relaxation in the hukou, just as we have in the one-child policy as well. It would seem to make sense to relax that too, really, because, you know, just what you said, allowing migrant workers more easy access to childcare, kindergartens, that kind of thing, is surely a step in the right direction, because then there won't need to be all these kids left behind, will there? You know, if it's easier for them to follow their parents to the cities.
Exactly.
This raises a very interesting question. We just talk about the problem of left behind children. Then what about they're being taken care of by the companion moms? Then what about left behind parents, the grandparents of these left behind children, right. who are too old to take care of themselves but have to remain in the villages?
It's a similar thing, isn't
it? Is it possible to expand the companion mom system to cover the grandparents?
Well, it is, and if you look at some countries, this does happen. It's called a district nurse. The district nurse will call in to an old person's home, maybe twice or even three times a day, maybe for just half an hour, and make sure they've had something to eat, make sure they're okay, it's a companionship thing, it's a social thing, but it also in a practical sense, you know, they make sure that they have had something to eat that day.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it is entirely possible, I think, to have some sort of district nurse system in China, which would be like a companion mum for the elderly. Yeah, good idea.
But just those remedies are just remedies for the time being. We'll have to sort out the real problem and find out some better solutions, maybe.
You mean there shouldn't be migrant workers in the first place?
There should be migrant workers, but just make a children's education and taking good care of your parents easier.
But I mean, you know, this whole concept of migrant workers is very interesting, really, from an outsider's point of view, like me. Because as far as I know, you two are migrant workers.
Yes.
I'm a migrant worker. An international one.
Should we hug and cry?
No, we shouldn't. But I think that what we should understand is that, I don't know really, it's just that why do we differentiate and call some people migrant workers? Because actually, I do believe that there is some sort of social stigma attached to that
yeah, there are
phrase
some,
too.
Yes.
When we're all migrant workers here in this studio.
Right, we are migrant workers.
So why don't we just call them workers and Chinese citizens and allow them, you know, benefits universally across China? I mean, to me, it seems very strange. I come here as an observer of Chinese culture,
You come here in peace.
And this is one of the things that seems that struck me immediately, you know, these restrictions on working in different cities.
Yes,
I know the reason for it. It goes back to the 1950s, I know, to stop an influx of very poor people into the cities.
No, I think the root of the problem is the imbalanced development between different parts of China. I think in this country, the southeast part of the country is more developed. That's where the job opportunities are. That's why people have to leave their hometown from maybe in the middle China or in western China to try and find a job in southwest China.
Yeah, but the hukou is to stop them doing that easily, isn't it?
Or maybe a better way to work around it is try and develop more business opportunities in southwest China,
which is happening. You only have to look at the joint ventures between international big car companies and Chinese car companies in Chongqing, for example, you know, to realize that this is happening in some parts of China. You know, the industry is being moved out instead of people having to come to, you know, the East Coast.
Yes.
The affluent southeast coast.
Yes. Now, let's go back to the child companion mom problem. This one more issue here. How do we make sure that these child companion moms are doing their jobs? I mean, there are reports about state subsidies on low-income families end up in the hands of, well, the relatives of the village heads.
Well,
how do we make
corruption,
sure that
isn't it? I mean, it's a more general problem of corruption then, and the elimination and supervision of anti-corruption measures. So I don't think it would be exclusive to the companion mums.
Is it possible to, for example, entrust the service to a third party and
yes.
have them supervise
someone
the whole
from,
process?
Yes, someone from outside the area could go in regularly and talk to all the children in private and find out what toys did they buy, what activities did they have, was that 10,000 kwai spent on them, for example, have they got any complaints about the companion mum? So I think that somebody from outside the area who is not connected with any of the local bureaucracy could go in there and do an independent survey and report.
Good. We have a comment from Arbin who says, it's a good practice to have companion moms, but is it possible that these moms will affect the psycho development of left behind children? I mean, I don't know. We've just mentioned that they may be responsible for monitoring the mental well-being of the kids, but they're not well-equipped or educated enough to try and do some intervention on this.
Well,
case.
No, but I think that anyone who is a child who might feel abandoned would think it was great to have this companion mum pop round and just make sure they're okay.
Especially when it's someone in your village,
like
you're
an
familiar
auntie.
With.
It's like a sort of auntie. You know, if your parents are away, the auntie sort of looks out for you. And this is how it used to work in villages, you know, going back a few decades. That's how it would have worked. Now it's been formalised with this government plan because of people's different and changing lifestyles in China.
Yeah, it reminds me of ancient China when we used to have this citang kind of thing, a place, a common place for people sharing the same surname. That's where they hold the place for schooling, where people of the same name will send their children to receive education by someone hired.
But there are these villages, aren't there, around China where, for example, like the Li village, where everyone is surnamed Li.
Yes, that's when they will have a citang, a public place, like a square or something, where they will invite a teacher and all the children in this village will go and receive the teaching or education there.
Mm.
But I think, you know, the children definitely going to spend more time together, and with these companion mother being with them, they will feel generally much happier.
Do you know, I just thought of something based on what you just said. Because the companion mum will be going from home to home, visiting the kids, in that case, the companion mum will be in a very good position to be like a kind of social media. For example, if she sees some kids who are interested in making model aeroplanes or something, or drawing, then she'd be in a position to say, oh, well, there are some other kids that like doing that down the road, people that they might never have met. So that this could be another advantage in hooking or in linking up, you know, children with other ones with the same interests.
A social networking tool in flesh and blood.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Not only among the children, but necessarily they do have this job description to be contacting their parents there in remote places by using social media. For example, if they want to have a video chat with their parents, they can contact via WeChat, and that's part of their job as well.
That's true. Anyway, it's good to see the government trying to do something to tackle this left-behind children issue. It's a roundtable here with Luo Yu, Mark, and myself, Lai Ming, in the studio. Coming up next, a longevity map revealed lately shows people with long lifespans cluster in certain areas. What's the secret to a long life? Stay with us.
Roundtable. Connect the dots. Paints the picture. Debates the big issues. Every day from 1 to 2 p.m. on Easy FM.
You're listening to Roundtable. A research shows senior citizens aged over 90 in China have nearly doubled in recent 10 years. China is entering an era of longevity. Besides, a longevity map revealed lately shows people with long lifespans cluster in certain areas. Why do people in those areas live longer? 研究发现，十年间我国90岁以上的老人已经增长了近一倍。从地理位置的分布上呢，也有一定的规律性。据此，专家描绘出了一幅长寿地图。到底是哪些地区的老人更长寿呢？长寿的奥秘又是什么呢？ So what are the places where people live longer? Can I try and move there?
Well, a longevity map has been drawn by experts of Chinese Academy of Sciences showing Hainan province ranking first in terms of longevity ratio. Shanghai and Guangdong province ranked the second and the third respectively. Qinghai province, unfortunately, is at the bottom place.
Oh.And let me just analyse the figures for just a moment, because I have not been to Hainan, but of course I know it's a tropical island,
yes,
right. known as a tourist destination, right? Mm. A very pleasant location.
Kind of like、words. California.
Exactly, yes, exactly, or perhaps Florida. Because Florida,
I think.
You see, Florida has the reputation in America of being the place where wealthy old people go to live.、
Mm-hmm.
And so could it be the same with Hainan?That people who are already old go to Hainan, and that's why Hainan is the top of the list, rather than something to do with Hainan itself. It could just be it's a pleasant environment, and people who have retired like to go and live there. Plus the fact they would need to have some money, therefore, generally people with money eat better, live better,
yes.
and have better health.
But you've got to give some credit to local...people who made it to 90 years old.
Of course,
there、
yeah.
are some senior citizens.
But I'm just wondering if it's an influx of people from outside.
Well, I think the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, they've implemented some very scientific methodologies、mm. when they surveyed and sampled those people. So I think it's basically about the aboriginals or local people living there in Hainan province.
Well, you say you think. I mean, do you know?
We trust.
This、
China's、
is a survey.
I believe.
We don't want I believe. With a survey, we want facts. We want to know how they've done the methodology. And actually, I don't think they tell us. So I do wonder whether it's incomers to Hainan who are already old and in good health that have boosted Hainan to the top of the list. I wonder, for example, if people from Qinghai, you know, when they make a few...quid, to use the English phrase,、
uh-huh.
if they move out、somewhere else.、
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Qinghai, again, if you look at the altitude, for example,、exposure to the sun and that kind of
lack thing. Lack of oxygen.
Well, exactly. These things、are not ideal for the human body, are they? Close proximity to the sun, thinner ozone,、mm. and also、less oxygen in the air.
It's funny because southern China used to be a very,、used to be a place where the Chinese、emperors try and exile their corrupt officials.
Yeah.
Well, especially when they were sentenced to exile in this part of China, they would complain that they wouldn't live any longer because this、mm. place is particularly humid.
It's described as a wild land,、
yes.
you know, full of、difficult vegetation and that kind of thing. I、
mm-hmm.
remember reading about Hainan,、how it was considered、a couple of hundred years ago, yeah.
There's got to be something special about this place to help people live longer.
Well, I mean, I stick to my own theory that it's...wealthy retired people who are already healthy, the fact that they have survived into their 90s proves they're healthy, who are moving to Hainan.
I think that only makes a very small proportion of the people.
Well, how can you say that? You don't know.
I can't say it.
Well, we still have the hukou system. We still have the hukou system.
Probably according to the Hainan hukou then.
Well, probably. It's not good enough for me, I'm afraid.
Okay. But according to the survey, there are several reasons which can actually attribute to people's longevity here. For example, the natural environment, as both of you gentlemen have argued, that Hainan province there is an island with very beautiful sunshine and weather and climate. And food there is mainly, I think people eat a lot of fish. Right.
Yeah, which is part of what's known as the Mediterranean diet, very healthy by the people of southern Italy.
And also some of the trace elements make a contribution as well. For example, there is a place named Luoyi village in Hainan. It's actually located in a volcanic rock area, and its water and soil contain very rich
minerals,
selenium.
Selenium, yeah.
Which is believed to help people prevent aging.
Oh, yeah. But and again, also pollution, of course, air pollution.
Right.
You know, Hainan is one of the least polluted parts of China, which, again, is going to have something to do with it. You know, the least amount of smog, I think.
What about socioeconomic issues?
Like I said, I mean, look, people that have made a bit of money and they want to retire, they're not going to go up to Heilongjiang in a temperature
Beijing with
minus 50
here.
Or in Beijing. Are they? They're not going to go up to the border with Russia where it's minus 50 Celsius in the winter. Of course they're not. Especially if they've got arthritis and poor bone quality.
Okay.
They'll go down to Hainan, won't they?
Well, we have a comment in support of your theory. Mao Xiaor says, Mark has a good point. Maybe Hainan's climate is very suitable for old people. I guess that's all the time we have for this edition of Roundtable. Thank you so much for your company. You can join our discussion on WeChat. We are EZFM Roundtable. Or leave us your thoughts on Sign and Weibo. Just search for 轻松调频 Roundtable. For our podcast listeners, find us at Roundtable 圆桌会议. Have a good week. Well, have a good day, and stay tuned to our EZFM. More to come.